Country Radio. Good morning, Suzanne Webb.
Good morning, Ian.
MP for Stourbridge. Well, I've coming on for 18 months now, just over.
It is indeed.
What an interesting time you've had as an MP for Stourbridge.
It's been completely fascinating. I mean, there we were. We arrived and we had to deliver Brexit. We had a week to do it. And then I think we all collapsed in a heap for 2 weeks over recess, absolutely exhausted. Came back into Parliament full of vigour. You know, we were going to go and deliver for Global Britain and get all that good, important legislation through. And then literally around us, you know, COVID-19 was consuming our lives. And as we all know, March the 23rd, we went into lockdown. And, you know, the role of an MP changed from being out there community-driven, driving legislation through Westminster to, for me, literally being at home. My kitchen became my office. And, you know, me and my staff, I would say, certainly my staff have never worked so hard with the amount and volume of work that came through. But not about, you know, agricultural policy, but about COVID-19 and how we were going to get ourselves out of this.
And, of course, you go back to that general election 2019. There were a lot of MPs like yourself, new, had never been in Parliament before. I mean, just going into an institution like that must get the sort of the butterflies going. It's a little bit nervous, and you had one big agenda in front of you. This is something that you campaigned on as a party into 2019 general election: get Brexit done. And that was that big task. You did that, and was that sort of sense of an optimism about right next? What's the next big challenge? What are we going to do?
God, absolutely. I mean, that was the sense when we were in the January. It's like, right, what are we going to deliver now? We are now going to be Global Britain. We've got to put the building blocks in to get ourselves there. And as you know, in the June of that year, I became the Parliamentary Private Secretary for International Trade. So I have now got the privilege of watching that and seeing that all the way through. But in the way came COVID-19. But no, absolutely, we all got in there and we all decided, you know, this is going to be so exciting. You know, we've got this great majority. We can deliver for the country. We can represent the country. We can build back better. And as I say, March the 23rd came and we had to switch to a totally and particularly unknown agenda, as we all know, of the pandemic.
So you've spent some time in Parliament, so there's been, but I suppose the biggest easing restrictions was last summer, of course, when Parliament was closed. Do you feel yet like it's your workplace?
That's an interesting question. I do. I very much do. I'm lucky being the PPS, then I'm often there anyway. But as you know, most of us have been on a proxy vote for some time. Mm-hmm. And that's really protecting the people actually who work in Westminster, thousands of people who work there. So I made a conscious decision to make sure I still go down to Westminster in a COVID-secure way. We're all masked up. We're all, you know, you can see us all social distancing actually in the chamber. I think September will be, you know, a baptism of fire. There's certainly going to be new ways of working for all the new MPs and perhaps some of the old ones, because we've got used to basically a call list. Interventions are actually on the call list, where normally you'd be in the chamber and you suddenly think, right, actually, I want to respond to that, what the minister said. So you just, you know, stand up and hope that the speaker would notice you and you'd actually have your intervention. We can't do any of that. Mm-hmm. It can't be spontaneous. So it will be a challenge in September, but we're going to have this quick training just to sort of, you know, refresh as to how we should behave and operate actually within Westminster. But yeah, it has been a challenge, but there have been greater challenges.
There have been greater challenges and still more to come. With the government is hoping to sort of end restrictions with coronavirus the 19th of July. But I'm going just very quickly, I mean, the House of Commons, it's not big enough for all of you for a start, is it? It's going to be difficult to imagine every MP getting into that sort of tiny chamber if we have to keep some type of guidance, shall we say, restrictions, social distancing.
I don't think that will happen. I think we're heading towards Freedom Day on the 19th of July. I'm not going to bet on that, but I think, you know, it's all our personal responsibility now to make sure that we do that. In Westminster, it won't be a problem. Recess happens within a week, so we'll be out back in our constituencies. And I think most of us as MPs can't wait for that to happen, because that's something we haven't been able to do properly for the last 18 months. So I will certainly be spending most of that summer actually out and about the constituency. But it'll be in the September when we go back to the old ways of working.
Now, a colleague of yours, a local colleague, Sajid Javid, has reclaimed his position on cabinet, has been given the health secretary's job. Some may argue, of all the cabinet positions at the moment, a poison chalice, a difficult job, because even though we may have this Freedom Day coming from July, coronavirus itself is not going to go away. There are still challenges we face as a country. I mean, are you optimistic that Sajid Javid is the man?
I am. I believe he's a safe pair of hands. He's got a proven track record. And I think he's hit the ground running at the moment in terms of his focus on getting us towards the 19th of July. And importantly, his links to the Treasury as well, obviously being a previous Chancellor. He understands how it works and he understands, you know, how to tap into that and make sure that we have the necessary funding. And we've got some big issues coming out of this as well, obviously about social care. There's also the issues around mental health as well. We have already invested significantly into mental health. But, you know, there's probably a smaller pandemic in terms of, you know, the mental health issues from this pandemic in terms of people's social isolation, also school children and so forth. So I definitely think he's the man for the job. I've worked with him previously before I became a Member of Parliament. I was part of the voluntary party for the Conservatives as area chairman and regional chairman, and I've came across him quite a few times. And I've got plenty of time for him, and I wish him all the best. I don't believe it's a poison chalice. I'm thinking now we have to sort of now move towards and beyond the pandemic and live with COVID-19 as best we can. And as I said before, we all have that personal responsibility for that.
Now, we know that the reason Sajid Javid is the health secretary is because last weekend Matt Hancock resigned. Do you think Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, perhaps should have taken the lead on that and maybe dismissed Matt Hancock?
I think, personally, we need to move on from that. We've got a new health secretary actually in place. I believe it's a deeply personal matter, and I believe that Matt Hancock made the right decision.
Fair enough. Let's talk about Stourbridge, your constituency.
Fantastic Stourbridge.
I like it. I've actually lived there since 1974. But the one of the things...
And I hope you vote the right way.
I'm completely politically neutral here on this show. That's such a loaded question. So I'd lived in Stourbridge since 1974, but... it was actually, and I mentioned to you this off air, I became a councillor in 2012 for Wollaston and Stourbridge Town. It's the first time that I really got to know my hometown, having lived there for over 40 years. Have you found sort of hidden gems of the town
as you've got to
go around?
Well, one of my favourite is Mushroom Green. I mean, it's just absolutely stunning. It's incredible. I always describe Stourbridge as the jewel in the crown, and it is, and it's because it's got many hidden jewels. Mushroom Green, Mary Stevens Hospice, I just absolutely think is phenomenal. You know what it gives, what it offers, and the people actually in there. Our parks are just beyond stunning, and we've got the Saltwells Nature Reserve, you know, right on the doorstep. Just absolutely fantastic.
And I think, you know, this is one of the things I've often found about, you know, you can live somewhere for many, many years, but you cannot see the places, the people, the things that are going on, the community groups that set up. And, you know, I was sort of involved a little bit in the community groups that set up around the initial stage of coronavirus. I'm just amazed at all these people from all walks of life just sort of like descended into this online community to help out. And there's lots of people like that across Stourbridge and across the wider borough.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I think that's... The way I describe Stourbridge is it's the people. It's the people that really matter here. And the people are just incredible. And there's something unique about it. And there's something unique about their generosity and certainly the way they reacted during this pandemic. I mean, I've been quite overwhelmed and seeing all those community groups set up and going out and doing all their good things that they've actually been doing. And even the local bars and restaurants going above and beyond. And then... there are local restaurants who are providing takeout services to the hospital, to the Dudley Trust, and going in there, you know, during the sort of the deepest, darkest times of the pandemic, providing takeout food for the staff in there. And it's actually quite overwhelming, quite humbling.
Businesses in Stourbridge, that clearly, like businesses everywhere, that they've struggled, the hospitality sector in particular, so pubs, we don't seem to have many nightclubs in Stourbridge anymore. We used to have quite a few.
We're probably both of us a bit too old for nightclubs.
I'm sure I could still pull it off. But, you know, the retail sector, you know, challenges from online shopping. Are you optimistic that, that Stourbridge as a town centre is going to bounce back as well?
I am, but there will need to be some investment, and I'm working with the council at the moment in what's called the Levelling Up Fund, and we're working on various projects and deciding where those projects will be. It'll be a 10-year plan. That doesn't mean to say we've got to wait for 10 years, but we'll do it slowly and steadily, get the right projects in place, get the building blocks in place, and see that investment come through surely and but slowly over those 10 years so we do the right things. As you and I know, things change over a period of time, so we want to get the right projects in there, but we're hopeful to put a bid in for that in the next phase, which is probably within the next 6 months.
Over in Hales Owen, they have the Business Improvement District bid, Hales Owen bid. It seems to have gone sort of really well, and it's a sort of a collection of local business owners who come together to promote the town. Is that something that, that perhaps Stourbridge might want to look at as well?
Most definitely. Now, during the pandemic, when I've been allowed to, I've been going out and speaking to sort of some of the shops on the high street, particularly, and talking to them and what they need. Now, I believe there was a bid that was originally set up, and it didn't work, but I think most definitely I've seen them work, and it's the most important thing to do, even if we just get that community of shop owners and small local businesses actually together to talk to each other and look to see what support they can get. That for me would be vital once the Freedom Day comes and we can actually start to have those meetings.
And of course, for listeners, Business Improvement District, this is where local businesses agree to a sort of an enhancement to their rates, but they get to choose how they spend that pot of money. There are things that perhaps Stourbridge could be looking at that might improve the town centre?
So for me, most definitely, we need to get the investment actually onto the high streets. There's too many empty shops at the moment. There's the issues with the actual landlords themselves, and we need to provide those incentives to ensure that they will reinvest into their own property rather than just leave it as an empty shopfront. And then also, you know, it's sort of bringing and encouraging new businesses actually into the area. There's a fantastic new business, and I'll just single this one out. It's called I'm Lucky, which is just up on Victoria Passage. Fantastic new shop, which opened up just before the second lockdown. And it was truly heartbreaking because, you know, I think we could all see that potentially it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. They just set up. But they reached out, and we provided the information to them, and they got the grants that they needed. And so they were able to keep their heads afloat and the business afloat. But they also went online. They did have an element of marketing skills actually within their team. But, I mean, they were truly innovative. And what they've done just truly inspires how out of sort of a deep, dark time for them potentially, they could have lost all their investment. They were able to do something about it. And that's the kind of thing I want to see, that people go out there, be innovative. I did say in the early days of the pandemic, when it was clear that the hospitality was going to suffer through this time, that, you know, if your thought was to go out there and wear a chef hat as for your career, then, you know, you're potentially going to have to look in a different way and look towards more construction as we build back better and look for jobs in that sector. And I think that's what people are going to have to do now, is think, well, hang on a minute, I wanted to be a chef, and that's no longer going to happen. This is the direction I'm going to start to go in, and you know, and construction obviously is a good way to go.
There's quite a lot of investment coming into Dudley Borough. We've seen the very light rail, the tram moving to Dudley, the what do they call it now, the interchange. It's a bus station, call it what it is. Briley Hill, of course, also getting some money from the Towns Fund. Are you concerned that maybe Stourbridge is missing out a little bit on some of this funding that's coming into the borough?
Oh, absolutely not. I can assure you of that, because we put our bid in for restoring a railway, so I'm really hopeful that in the second round we'll get our Stourbridge Dasher. We'll at least get some investment into that, just so they can scope it out and put a business case together. Now, I've been working really hard behind the scenes. As I said earlier, it's a slow process. You can't just go in all guns and try and get all the money. You have to look at what needs to be done. You have to look at it over a period of time and how that will improve the area. And that's what I've been doing. The Levelling Up Fund, looking at those important projects, and then the Restoring Your Railway to get our Stourbridge Dasher, which will link into Briley Hill.
That phrase, levelling up, I mean, it's been something that the government has been pushing pretty much from day one after the election. What does levelling up look like in Stourbridge?
I prefer to use building back better. Mm-hmm. That's really the way, that's the terminology I'm going to be using. I just have to refer to the levelling up fund, basically.
Yeah.
So for me, it's building back better. And that's in the sense that building back better from basically from the pandemic. And so looking at what we need to do. We know the high streets have struggled. We know hospitality has struggled. So what do we need to do to make sure that we build on the successes of many of our business, but we build better onto that and into the future to make them stable and robust, and so they can sustain a pandemic, you know, should that ever happen again, which people obviously talk about at the moment. It's happened once, is it going to happen again? But that for me is the most important bit. It's building that better, investing in people.
Now, in building has been a topic of conversation over the last week or so because of the Black Country Plan. This is where the local councils in the Black Country have set out their housing needs and how they are going to meet it over in the forthcoming years. Now, there's been some concern and criticisms raised about the potential to build on Greenbelt land in Dudley, but there have also been some successes over the campaigns. So a group that we had on here a few weeks back was the Save the Corbett Meadow. And I know that you've been talking to them. They've had some good news recently.
They have. They've worked so hard, and I met them on Monday. They've been able to ensure in the plan that it's going to be designated as local green space, which is just fantastic. They've worked so hard. They've done all the due diligence. They've gone back over a period of time to check the history of the land, the archaeological elements of the land, and the environmental aspects of it at all, and put together a really robust argument to the council. And they've won that. And so it's in the plan. It's still not protected. We've got another few years to go, and there'll be a consultation on that plan. But I'm truly hopeful that piece of land will be respected for what it is. It's a really key and important piece of environmental community area for us here in Stourbridge.
It's a piece of land that was bestowed by John Corbett to the people of Stourbridge. Currently, though, owned by the hospital, Dudley Group of Hospitals Trust, which is, I think, where the threat came from, because there's developers potentially looking around to build houses. It's not like Mary Stevens Park. It's not somewhere you can go into. Is there an argument, now that we're looking at protecting this green space, that actually we do look at ways in which we can open it up to the community? And I'm not saying necessarily take it away from Dudley Group of Hospitals, but certainly encourage the Hospital Trust to enable the local community to get better use of it.
I totally agree. When I first visited Corbett Hospital, which was for the meadow itself, and you sit in the cafe and you look out, I mean, it's just stunning. I think there's the value to the patients actually within the hospital. There's a healing element to it. I'm not going to say spiritual element, but I think all of us who've ever been poorly in our lives, then you just need something like that. Soothing, I guess. I don't know. So, yeah, I hope so. I'm hearing that benches are being put out there already.
I've seen some pictures, yeah.
Yeah, so this is fantastic and quite encouraging as well. I have sympathy with the hospital, I should add. I work very closely with the hospital, and I realise what that investment would have meant to them, and the investment that money would have been done to put back into the hospital itself. So, you know, I was caught between a rock and a hard place. But I'm really pleased that it is going to be designated local green space come 2024. But yeah, I think we should celebrate this as a fantastic piece of community land. But of course, we have to be mindful that if we encourage too many people to come onto that land, we might not protect it in such a way that we had intended.
I think they were on the show a couple of months back, and I asked them about access to it, and I think they had that sort of do we really want people? I'm not sure. So yeah, it's a conversation that can be had, because there's very little green space in the whole country that is actually open to the public. So the bits that we do have that are open to the public, we do have to protect. And I guess this is where the Black Country Plan is coming for some criticism. I think it's King Swinford and Wall Heath. There is proposals in it to build on Greenbelt land. And I've got some concerns. I think that there may be Greenbelt land that's not in Dudley Borough, but borders onto Stourbridge that could be at risk in future. What can community do if they want to protect their particular Greenbelt land now?
So the most important thing they can all do is, when the consultation opens up during the summer, is they must have their say. And don't go down the NIMBY route, not in my backyard, but just come up with those important constructive comments. What's worked really well with the Save the Corbett Meadow Action Group is that they all group together. They've got some important skills. So they've got someone on there who has planning knowledge. And so they know the language. They knew the language, what they needed to sort of go and knock on the council's door to try and ensure that they got it designated as the right space. So that's something I would recommend. Now, prior to becoming an MP, I've spent 7 years protecting this piece of greenbelt land over in Birmingham. We weren't successful, but we've managed to stave it off. We managed to make some changes. But the key to that and sort of the success of the group was just doing that, grouping together, finding someone who's got some legal knowledge, finding someone who's got some planning knowledge. But the most important thing for me is that I believe that the subject matter experts is the community itself. And if you all start to talk, you suddenly draw on all this knowledge and ancient footpaths and rights of ways and so forth. And you understand where there may be floodplains. You understand sort of where that may have been some village green at some point. Mm-hmm. That does deserve some protections. So once you start to have those conversations, so the most important thing is group together, have your say, and importantly, let's hope the council listen.
Oh, the Village Green Appreciation Society. Oh, is there anything more quintessentially English than that?
Exactly.
But we've heard from the Mayor of the West Midlands, Andy Street, Leader of Dudley Council, Patrick Harley, all saying Brownfield first. And all four of the Dudley MPs, yourself and the other three, have all criticised elements of the Black Country Plan. When we have a Conservative government, a Conservative Mayor, a Conservative local council and four Conservative MPs, why is there a threat to our Greenbelt land? Who is making these decisions?
So, on this one, what I would say on this one, so you have to put the local plan in context. So there is a housing need. We need houses. Young people need houses. And we need a certain type of houses. And there's a huge amount of pressure to build. Now, I think that has to change, and I think we have to look differently as to where we build now. I think our cities and our boroughs are actually full, and I think we are not even at the point of urban sprawl. We're beyond urban sprawl. So I think now, going forward for planning, we have to start to look at this very differently and creatively. The government does have a new, it's a white paper that is going to do this. It's going to change how we plan. It's going to look at more sustainability. It's going to look at, you know, the carbon neutral. It's going to start looking at sort of building more beautiful homes and so forth. Now, I have been desperate to speak in debates in Westminster on this, but as you can imagine, for planning, there's a queue of MPs actually wanting to speak, and I haven't yet got in. And what I would like to sort of keep pushing for is that any future development has to be environment-led. And what I mean by that is that we build our new villages and towns and settlements around the environment, not concrete it over, but we respect it and we ensure that we don't just build these kind of monolithic 500 home housing estates. We actually build those beautiful villages that we know of old, where, you know, in our hearts, you know, we would all like to retire to. And you know, it's to some extent quite envious of those people who are able to live in those beautiful mm-hmm. villages. And that's what we should be building for. And I think we're building for our children and grandchildren's futures. And I think that's what we need to consider, not the monolithic approach. To some extent at the moment, you know, most local councils are just, you know, headlong into, we've got a housing need. It's a significant, it's a huge number. Even across the Dudley Borough, across Black Country, I think there's something like a 26,000 shortfall in terms of land availability to houses to build and to meet the demand of, I think it's something like 78,000. Mm-hmm. So we've got a massive problem. So ideally, I would like to put the brakes on and basically turn around and say, we've got to look at planning differently. We've got to consider that, unfortunately, difficult decisions will have to be made. But let's not just keep infilling on our little green spaces and our towns and our urban areas. We've got to start to look creatively now where we build for the future.
What about building up to the sky?
That's a possibility as well, and we've seen some fantastic examples of that in our cities, in the City of London and certainly in the City of Birmingham as well. And we know there's some significant investment going on there at the moment.
Because this country's got a bit of a bad reputation when it comes to high-rise flats. You know, it's a very 60s thing. I was in Dubai last year which is a city that is basically built to, into the sky. And clearly there's some real luxury there. You have those villages in an apartment block that has the, it's got a shopping centre, it's got living accommodation, it's got leisure accommodation, it's got gardens. Is this something that as a country, rather than, you say, adding to the urban sprawl, we have to start of thinking that maybe look up, or maybe even go into town centres and take some of those closed shops, retail units, and turn those into living accommodation?
So what you've just described in terms of the building up, you've built communities there because you've got the green space around them, you've got the shops, you've got where they need to go for their utilities, the infrastructure and so forth. And that to me is a massive positive. And then also what you're talking about, the high street, I'd love to be able to do that. There are some conditions around some of the properties that are linked to pension pots and so forth, mm-hmm. which have restrictions on how they're able to repurpose those buildings. So there's a team of us, a few of us are actually looking into that as to how we can change that. But I'd love to do that. And what you're doing, you're bringing back that community. They're building that better. You're building in there in terms of the hospitality as well, because we all know once you put mm-hmm. people living in those areas, you know, people need to eat and drink and so forth, and so you're opening up that kind of infrastructure. So no, those two things I would actually love to do. And the thing, I think if you speak to any architect who actually trained, if you look at their years they spent actually training, would they be wanting to design what they're designing now if they're working in large institutions? And I give you any bet, if you ask them, they'll go no. Mm-hmm. Now, the ones who set up as individuals and have been able to do that, and they are building beautiful and they're being very creative, but they're not building the monolithic housing estates. Mm-hmm. And that's the unfortunate thing at the moment, is that they're trained to build in very inspirational worlds, but then they get into institutions and they're not. They're building those building block houses.
I'm really excited about this conversation now, because after the war, Second World War, we had to build back pragmatically.
Yes.
So that was a lot of concrete being built. It was a lot of square blocks. It was, you know, we had to get it done, and we had to get it done quickly. And the architecture of the time, sort of, they were the leaders. The new ones come in the sort of 50s and 60s, and of course they're being managed and in these big firms who had got used to building square blocks of concrete everywhere. And then they come out, they start to take control in the 70s. And it's almost like there's this delay in new ideas coming through into our building. But this, going back to this idea of building back better, it's almost like, well, we have no choice now. Or else if we try and recreate the past has moved now, we've got to be looking at different, more imaginative ways. Is the investment going to be there?
If you're talking about high streets, that's private investment that's got to drive mm-hmm. that one, most definitely. In terms of how we plan better, that is your local authorities. Those are the ones who've got to start to think, how do we do this? But that has to also be driven by central government. And that's the white paper that's coming through, and that will end up hopefully in the sort of planning in terms of what we need to do going forward. And that is all about building back into these, you know, what I was saying about sustainability, you know, building those beautiful homes and also making us, you know, sort of, you know, the carbon, you know, neutral and working towards there. But we've got to stop when we're looking and building these big monolithic estates. That mentality has actually got to stop now. Someone's got to do it. Some local authority has got to say, right, we've had enough now. We can't keep doing this. And people are literally just buying those houses because of a postcode or because they can get mm-hmm. their children into the schools. And I give you any bet, within 10, 15 years, they're looking around them and going, well, actually, I've only got a very small garden here. I've hardly got any driveway. You know, I've got my kids living here. I've got 2-3 cars, and they're not able to park the cars. And also, you know, when you're looking forward, you know, to sort of, you know, the electric environment as well, where are those charging points and mm-hmm. so forth? So I think we have to stop and think as to how we start to build our beautiful places and how they are actually look. And in my head, I've got a vision. And as I say, they look like those old villages close to the infrastructure, community gardens. They've got community areas. You mentioned those houses in the 60s and also the 70s. They had space. All of them had space. They had front gardens, they had driveways, they had garages, and they had, you know, fantastic long gardens. Now, when you see the new houses being built, they're small boxes, barely any front garden, probably concreted over, and then just a postage stamp actually for a garden. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's, you know, for a healthy state either. So I'm not going to be able to change it, but I'm certainly going to be able to talk about it. And hopefully at some point I can influence this drive to have more environmentally led building and development going forward.
A piece of advice as well for anybody who wishes to take it. Any high street you go down, look up. Don't look at the shop fronts, look at the top of the shops, because the history is in the sky. I mean, it's the same in Stourbridge. If you look at some of the very sort of like glass-fronted shops all the way down, it looks like any other high street until you gaze upwards and see the beautiful architecture that this town still has.
Can I just add on that, mm-hmm. I think that's important as well, that we protect mm-hmm. that architecture. You know, we talked about the 60s and 70s. I say those houses in terms of the space, but we knocked down quite a lot of old buildings and some of our high streets to build those new shopping centres. I think, is it Brent Hill then when that first came in? You know, sort of big concrete place mm-hmm. again, shopping places. And I think many, I wouldn't hate to see Stourbridge High Street or Leahy High Street knocked down and new development actually put in there. I would hope that we'll be more of a restorative approach and renovative approach to those properties. That's what I'd like to see, keeping that history.
Tonight at 8 o'clock.
Yes.
there's a little football. We haven't mentioned it at all in these 2 months.
I don't know
honestly.
What you're going to mention. I really don't.
So I've seen you on social media. Clearly, you're excited, as I am. I'm overexcited, to be fair, about England in the quarterfinals of the European Championships, Euro 2020, here in 2021 against Ukraine. You are excited, aren't you?
I'm so excited. I really, really am. You know, my head is planning today. Obviously loving being here, but my head and my heart is firmly set on 7:45 when they do that kind of warm-up on the television and then that kick-off at 8 o'clock. I'm so excited.
I mean, for someone like myself, I'm a season ticket holder at Wolverhampton Wanderers since last spring. I've lost and I've missed live football. It's not so much the football, because, to be honest, watching Wolves live is difficult at times, but the ability to be with people, to spend time before and after is that sort of communal element of watching football, being involved in it. We've got some of that back now.
Oh, definitely. It's a joy.
So what's your plans to, are you watching it at home? Are you going out?
I'm going to Stourbridge Football Club.
Couldn't get a table there.
I'm going to Stourbridge Football Club. So I'm hoping, you know, we'll be in the heart of the community. I mean, I was at the Britannia Inn last time, and that was just fantastic. I mean, what a game. It was just incredible. And for the very reasons you've actually said as well, it was the fact that, you know, sort of being there with people and that sense of community again. So just for me, I'm not just an MP saying, you know, I love my football and we're playing England. I was a barmaid for a few years when I was a student, and the one pub I was working in is where lots of Aston Villa supporters went in. And so there were some of my best friends to this day, and they dragged me around loads of football games for Aston Villa versus Birmingham City, certainly the local derbies. And that's just been instilled in me, and certainly me nan as well. You know, the pools on a Saturday, we'd watch sort of, you know, the catch-up still goes on now. And so I love it, and I love all these big games, and so I'm just so excited about all of this, and I can't wait actually for the final either, which, fingers crossed. I mean, that would just be, oh.
Yeah.
Words can't quite say. You seem to be a bit more pessimistic about this, Rob.
Yeah, I've been there, 1990.
I was with you. Well, not literally with you.
1996. And even the last World Cup, when we got knocked out in the semi-finals, it just feels like there is some bad news about to hit. I'm not sure whether it's tonight. I'm not sure whether it's in the semi-final. I've been to a Wembley semi-final in the FA Cup, and we lost, and there was nothing worse.
Yeah.
I'd rather lose in the final, at least, because I haven't been to the final. But yeah, to be fair though, I've been really impressed with Gareth Southgate. I think he's created a football team.
Yeah, exactly. I think previously they've worked in silo, and now you can actually see the team. And can I sort of obviously mention Jude Bellingham as well?
I know, Stourbridge born.
And he's got his first cap as well. So I'd love to see him come on the pitch, certainly today. I wish him all the best, and it's fantastic. I'm so proud, incredibly proud.
Yeah, and June, if you're listening, I know you're not, but come on this show as well. Come to tell us about after you've won the European Championships.
That'd be fantastic for you.
So thank you, Suzanne Webb, MP for Stourbridge.
Thank you.
We also have in the studio, very quietly in the corner, Adam, who you work for Suzanne, I believe. Get close to that microphone.
I do, yes.
So thank you for joining us. And you can't be in this studio without at least saying one thing. Yes. So the one thing I'm going to ask you is score prediction for tonight, England versus Ukraine.
Yep. It's definitely going to be 1-0 to England.
Okay.
All right. I can guarantee that. I've had a very good track record so far.
Goal scorer?
I don't know. I don't get into that game.
And Suzanne, your score prediction, please.
Well, I was going to go with 2-0, obviously, to us. But I also value Adam's opinion as well. So I'm going to sit with 2-0. But I wouldn't be surprised if it came in at 1-0. But we're going to win. We're going to win.
Yep.
0-0, 120 minutes after extra time, penalties, oh, lose 5-4. Dan Richards is up next. He's getting himself ready. He's in his England shirt. I'm just having a quick look. He probably wants a bigger English shirt, if I'm absolutely honest. It looks like he's, yes, he's seen that. So have a great weekend. Have a great night. And, yeah, thank you very much, Suzanne. Adam, have
thank
a great
you.
Weekend.
Thank-